open a work session on SB 5574, the Teacher Standard and Practices Commission. Colleagues, for the sake of scheduling, we actually scheduled this for 2 days, although I do not anticipate that we will be spending more than some time today on this. And the reason we scheduled it for 2 days is because at the time we were scheduling, we didn't really know what would be happening on these 2 days. And we really didn't have any of the major budgets that are before us actually ready to go out or ready to go to work session by tomorrow. And we do have several small licensing boards that are still before the committee, but we still have an outstanding decision on those before we can move the bill out that most of them are contained within. So we were at kind of a stalemate. We will know the budget for, or not the budget, we will know the schedule for next week probably by Wednesday of this week. So, and who knows what's going to happen in the building in the next 72, 48 hours. But with that, this is the work session on the Teacher Standard and Practices Commission. Ms. McGlashan has a recommendation to go over, and then we'll have discussion, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. I've distributed a packet of information for you today. I'll briefly take you through it so you can orient yourself. There's a memo from me to the subcommittee. Behind that, you'll see the budget spreadsheet from the Orbit system, and we'll be using that in our discussion as well. Behind that, you'll see a cash flow analysis that's been prepared, and the last couple of pieces of paper have to do with the performance measurements for the agency. I'd also like to point out that the agency has responded to some questions that you had when we were having their public hearings during phase two. There's a report on the 2003 budget note. Senator Gordley had a question on that budget note, and so the agency has prepared a response to that. A written response is requested. And then there was also a question brought up about using a new phone system in place of a permanent position, a permanent public service representative position in the agency's requested budget. And when we get to that policy package, we can talk about that some more. So if I could just direct your attention back to the memo, I'll just walk you through it. It's fairly short, 2 pages, front and back. The first part of the memo simply gives you some historical perspective on this agency's budget, starting with the 9901 biennium, going through the LFO recommended budget. And I'll just point out that the governor's recommended budget is $3,820,753 total funds. And as you'll probably recall from the public hearing, these are all other funds from the licensing fees and other fees charged to teachers and other educators. And this is about a 6.9% increase over the 03-05 legislatively approved budget. Now, the LFO recommended budget is a 9.7% increase over the 03-05 legislatively approved budget and a 2.7% increase over the governor's budget. And there's one adjustment in particular that's driving this increase, and that is for an increase in cost to the agency for fingerprinting fees charged by the Oregon State Police. And they actually have no control over this. This is something that they are just charged and have to pay. And that's the primary driver of the 9.7% increase. It's about, well, I shouldn't say it's the primary, but it's about 3.8% of that 9.7% increase, and the remainder, the 5.9%, is primarily from employee compensation, and then the increase, the net increase in FTE of 1.50. So if you'll look at the Orbit spreadsheet as we go through the memo, I think that'll help add some clarification to these budget recommendations in Section 2 of the memo. And the first recommendation is that you approve essential packages 010, 020, 022, 030, and then policy option package 090 as shown in the attached worksheet. And if you look at the worksheet, you'll see on the first page that, and I should point out that it starts with page 305 because pages 1 and 2 were just summary information that really wasn't meaningful. So we're just using pages 3, 4, and 5 for the work session. But if you look at the top of page 3, you'll see those packages listed. And I'll just briefly go over those for you. 010 is... my bearings here. Pardon me. Is the what we call a non-PICS, personal services and vacancy factor package. And this package is $85,129, and it's primarily the result of moving the cost of the pension obligation bonds from services and supplies in this biennium to personal services next biennium. And 022 is a phased out of one-time costs that the agency has had in the 0305 biennium, and this includes limitation for computers and a scanner to replace their microfilming, some professional services that were involved in implementing the scanning technology, and then some limitation for data equipment to store electronic images. So that phase out is $86,321. And then 030 is simply the standard inflation and price list adjustments in the budget. The AG cost adjustment is included in this package, and we'll talk about the reduction in the AG rate and how it affects this agency in a package later in package 801. And then package 090, which is towards the middle of the spreadsheet, that reduces the agency's budget by $44,661, and that's primarily to align the budget with historical spending patterns and some projected expenditure patterns. Then, as we get into the policy option packages, the first one is the public service package. And you might recall that that would add three permanent positions to the agency. Now, two of those, for an equivalent 1.5 FTE, would be continuation of positions that they got for the 0305 biennium to help them with their workload. And one of these is the public service representative, and I think, there were some questions on whether it would be a better choice to have the new phone system versus giving the agency the public service representative on a permanent basis. And at this point, I'll just draw your attention back to the memo from the agency on this issue. What the public service representative has helped the agency do in the 0305 biennium is reduce a very significant backlog of emails. I believe at one time they had something like 1,500 emails that they were not able to address because they didn't have the staffing. And right now they're still at any given point in time about 50 emails behind. And in part, they've been able to reduce the backlog so dramatically is because they were getting redundant emails and phone calls because people weren't getting answers the first or second or third, you know, times that they were trying to contact the agency. But even with reducing that backlog, they still are behind in emails. And this position has also helped the agency provide more even coverage when they have other public service representatives out on vacation or if they're ill or out for some other reason. And it's also allowed the agency to expand its phone service hours, and that's helped as well. And right now, they're able to respond to emails and phone calls within about 3.5 days, and they were at about 7 days. Their goal is to respond in about 24 hours. So you can see that even with the addition of this position, this biennium, they haven't quite reached that goal. We did use their budget for overtime and temps that they had up until this biennium to fund this position. And back in the 0103 biennium, they had about $90,000 between those two budget categories, and they no longer have that in their budget. because of the addition of this position, and this position cost them about, it would cost them about $80,000 in the 0507 biennium. So you can see it's actually a little less expensive to have the position than it is to pay overtime and hire temporary staff. And I would just point out that another benefit to having somebody there full-time is, you know, if it's a consideration, is that you have consistent quality. Instead of hiring temporary people every year, you know the person, they've been trained, and you're not having to do that time and again. So quality, you know, certainly quality of staff work certainly can be a consideration.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Ms. McGlashan, could I stop you for a moment?
Sure.
I think you said this position is about $80,000.
A biennium. Correct.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I was beginning to think we're paying someone $80,000 a year to do email. Okay, a biennium.
Sorry if I didn't clarify that.
Well, I sometimes forget to think in those terms, so I appreciate that.
Okay. So they do find that they still do have periods of time, especially during the summer hours, when the phone system simply isn't meeting the needs of their clientele. And so there still is interest, even with this position, to look into a phone system that would allow people to use the touchpad to gain information over the phone without having to talk to someone. They have issues with their current phone system where people are just dropped out of the queue without any warning, and they're hoping a new system that they could put into place would avoid this, and also possibly rerouting people to voicemail instead of just being on hold and then finally giving up and not getting an answer to their question. So even with a new phone system, you can see where if somebody leaves a voicemail, there's eventually a person, a body at TSPC is going to need to respond to that. So I hope that addresses the concerns about whether or not it would be, you know, an trade-off, either having the public service representative or a new phone system.
Yes, Senator.
Can you give us some sense of how many of the calls coming in could be answerable by simply the touchpad technology, and how many of those calls coming in actually require a person to respond to them?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, I cannot give you that information. The agency might be able to do that. I believe one of the things that they want to do is research what kind of phone systems are out there and what could possibly help them with the types of questions that they get from their customers. And this is about, if you look in this memo, you'll see that it's about a 19-month process for them to figure out exactly what's available, testing a system, what would work for them, and then revise the system as needed. So I think the agency's here to answer your question.
Yes, Chair Devlin and Senator Whitsitt and members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain, for the record. Larry Warren is our office manager in IT tech person. I think both of us have looked at the phone messages. I think he has a better idea of the content of a lot of them. I'm going to let him address that first.
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, members of the committee, Larry Warren, TSPC office manager.
What I'm hoping to see out of the phone system is something similar to what happened to our website when we put a license inquiry out there where individuals could go look themselves up or districts could go look themselves up, find information without having to make that phone call. What we see is anywhere from 800 to 1,200 inquiries a month. And certainly we weren't handling that amount of work before the license inquiry went up because we weren't receiving 800 to 1,200 phone calls a day on license status. So what we're hoping for, one of the primary objectives with the phone system would be to let folks without who don't have web access or maybe it's more convenient for them to use the telephone to get that same information over the telephone. But then, you know, we certainly still do get phone calls about just a simple status question. What, you know, when is my license going to be issued? What documents have you received? That tends to go up in the summertime. The complexity of our questions during the winter actually seems higher to me. They seem less likely to be answered by the phone system. Whereas in the summer, as we get into that rush, I would say anywhere from 10 to 15% of our calls a day are ones that could be answered by that phone system.
And members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain, the other thing that I think is important that Larry hinted at is that the people who do have web access actually use it. They rarely call. They do make their contacts via email. They've found that convenience, and they navigate the web. The phone people also have a tendency to be of the nature of wanting to talk to a live body. They'll call back repeatedly, even if we email them an answer sometimes. If they're using the phone for access, they want to talk to a live person. I actually spent several days last summer helping to answer phones, and it actually takes a long time to answer about a dozen phone calls. It can sometimes take 2 hours for a single person, because these people, one question leads to another, and they want personal service, and you don't want to cut them off. So it's really hard to quantify, other than I don't expect a lot of reduction in workload, because I don't expect a reduction of reliance on the phone. So, and the point I hope might not also be clear is that, so what I could get from a touch tone would be, we received your documents that you mailed in on Tuesday. We're now processing applications that we received 2 weeks ago. And so if yours came in Tuesday, we expect to have that done in 2 weeks. That type of information would be what you could now access impersonally on the web that we would envision somebody being able to call in to get. But if they called in and they said, you know, I've taught for 3 years and I have this number of hours, am I highly qualified in social studies, which tends to be the character of a lot of our questions, that takes an analysis and opening the file and personal review. So that, I don't know if that helps.
Sure. Yeah. Senator Whitson, were you? Senator Nelson.
Are you having an increase in application? Are there more teachers trying to come into the state? Why is there all of a sudden this huge demand for more information?
Chair Devlin and Senator Nelson, I think the demand has always been, well, first of all, I think the demand has always been there. I just don't think our ability to deliver a response to that information has been particularly high until, I'd say, the last 2 years, maybe 3 years is when it really started building. No Child Left Behind had an enormous work impact on our office. So while the numbers of bodies have remained about the same, the numbers of questions have about quadrupled. And as new people come into the system, that question continues to remain. I expect this next year, I thought the No Child Left Behind and high quality teacher issue was going to kind of level off and drop. We just had the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Act, definition of high quality teacher come out without any rules. And it's outrageously complex. And so we're waiting for the federal government to give us the regulations so we can answer people without wasting their time. So we know in about December we're going to get another bubble for about 6 months to a year just on special ed teachers alone.
I mean, do you keep statistics? I mean, maybe you're here someplace, I just haven't seen them, about the number of new applications coming. Are we seeing an increase of teachers coming into the state?
Chair Devlin and Senator Nelson. We have consistently for the last 3 years licensed 60% of our new licenses are from out of state. Now, the actual numbers of licenses that we've issued this last year dropped not quite 2,000 from the previous year, and we projected that. But the ratio maintained, so we're still getting an influx of people out of state. And the fascinating part of that to me is that 2 years ago, when districts felt that they were in better economic shape, they were recruiting. They were in California and Arizona and Texas trying to recruit bilingual, particularly Latino bilingual educators. They haven't had the resources to do that, and I know they haven't been doing that. We're still getting an influx of out-of-state educators and applicants. Fascinatingly, it isn't drying up. Our numbers in our teacher preparation programs are holding flat. They're not dropping. So.
You probably, it's been a while since I've seen these numbers, so I won't try to actually quote them, but it's some incredible number, like the number of individuals that go through teacher education programs, that's something like only about 60% actually ever enter the teaching profession, and then 5 years later, only about 50% of those are still teaching. So it's actually, those, don't quote me on those figures, but I'm sure you've heard similar figures.
I have. Senator Devlin, I think that I did a little bit of research on that. The attrition in other professions isn't dissimilar. We just tend to get a lot of attention on the education issue. A lot of teachers go in to teaching thinking that it's going to be like they thought teaching was when they were students, and then they get into the classroom without having done anything else other than a one-term practicum and discover, oh, this wasn't their calling.
With 37th graders. And
so, yes. Or 50 in some cases. I had 55th graders back in 1980. So, anyway, you know, you just never know. But some of it, I think, is just can go to naturally with any profession. And some of it's an issue we need to address because it's costly.
Thank you. Well, we'll proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. In addition to the public service representative position, there are two others in this package. One is currently a half-time position, and the agency's budget, the governor's recommended budget, would increase that position to a full-time position and make it permanent. It's currently limited duration. The remaining one would be a new permanent position, and that new permanent position would help provide support to other staff in the commission and help out with the disciplinary workload demands, and those demands have been increasing for the agency. The package also reclassifies a position that has increased oversight for the information systems, the budgeting, and the human resources functions in the agency. If you, mention that the total for the package is $235,408 other funds. So if you will flip over to page 4 of 5, at the top of the spreadsheet you'll see the LFO recommendation. And that would be to approve the package as modified for the PERS rate decrease. As you know, the rate in the governor's budget was is 15.52%, and the PERS board a couple, 2-3 months ago recommended a rate of 14.63% for the, and that rate would affect the 0507 biennium. So the savings there are $1,261 other funds. I'm also recommending that you approve the reclassification of the support supervisor 2 to a principal executive manager B based on the current duties of that position, to approve the establishment of the public service representative position as permanent, to continue the establish the other two requested positions as limited duration positions, and that would be an equivalent of 2.0 FTE. One of the reasons why I'm recommending that the half-time limited duration position from this biennium be continued as limited duration next biennium is because the agency does want to use this position in their scanning function, and they're desiring to move to front-end scanning of documents rather than wait till after the fact. They'd like to make those documents immediately available to other staff, and so they would kind of be a doubling up of that workload while they're trying to keep up with the workload they have now, as well as move to the front end scanning. That would require some additional staff work. But once they get to that point where they are caught up and they're just doing everything at the front end, I'm not sure that they will need that the entire FTE. And I can't make a recommendation that part of the FTE be permanent and part of it be limited duration. So, and then the other reason for making it limited duration at this point in time is it would also be involved in receipting of monies. And as you heard during their public hearing, they're trying to go to all five-year licenses. And so it may be that that workload involved with receiving of money will eventually minimize or be a little bit lower than what it is now. And then as far as the position for handling the workload related to the disciplinary function and providing support to other staff within the agency. It may be that the disciplinary workload may level out, and also after the agency does some of these initiatives like the front-end scanning and moving to all five-year licenses, they may just have a need for a different staffing configuration at the end of the 0507 biennium, and this would just give them the opportunity to kind of re-look at that. The limited duration positions would be phased out, and then they can determine what they actually need in terms of a staffing classification for the functions that remain. So that's my recommendation on policy package 101. Then policy package 102 is a technology package, and this adds expenditure limitation to replace some obsolete computers, some laser printers, and a server, and this would allow them to replace about 65% of their existing computers, and those computers have limited memory and technological capabilities. It would also allow them to have some internal backup to protect their data. There are savings from the Smart Buy program, so I'm recommending that the package be approved as modified for those savings, and that would reduce it by $4,792. And then package 801, that's the LFO analyst adjustments package, and those are various, I'd call them technical adjustments. It would decrease the rest of the budget level by $11,829 for the PERS rate decrease. It would also decrease the budget by $15,868 for the Attorney General hourly rate decrease from $119 to $111 per hour. But it would increase the budget by $136,000 other funds for an increase in fingerprinting fees charged by the Oregon State Police. And effective March 1st of this year, that fee has gone from $12 to $28 per applicant. So it hits this budget fairly substantially. So the recommendation for that package is to approve it. At $108,303 other funds, but I'm also recommending that you ask the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the $136,000, and I didn't specify that amount in my recommendation, so I want to clarify that. While the fee increase is effective for this biennium, the Oregon State Police needs to get ratification by the legislature to continue that fee increase into 0507. So if they don't have that fee increase ratified, TSPC will not be charged the $28 fee. Rather, it'll go back to the $12 fee, and they won't need the additional limitation in their budget as a result.
And we will have a problem in one of the public
And then you will budgets. Have a problem. That's correct, Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
Just a quick, Senator Witz. Just a quick question to counsel. What was the AG's rate per hour during the 03-05 by
98? I believe it was $98, Senator Witz.
Okay.
And I need a question answered, if I could, Mr. Chair. In the policy package number 102, the technology package, mm-hmm. How obsolete are those computers?
I have that information in my notebook, but I bet the agency has it off the top of their head, Senator Walker.
Chair Devlin, Senator Walker, members of the committee, most of the computers that we're replacing are approximately 5 years old. And the biggest feature that they're not supporting right now is some of the scanning technology we've implemented. They're not quick enough, and we see a lag. And we've done some stopwatch surveys and times on those to see. And on the faster processor, we can reduce the amount of time that staff is waiting for an image to load up on their computer.
What's the clock speed on most of those?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, the clock speed on most of them we're replacing are 400 to 700 class machines.
Yeah.
Hmm. Worth asking because we have a printer that's so old it's ridiculous. My computer, I had to buy a new one this session, a new one last session, so that I have two working computers. So, but computers. A lifespan on a computer is about 3 to 5 years, even though the IRS, I think, you depreciate a computer over a 7-year lifespan, which is unreal.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, with those recommendations, if you turn to page 505 of the Orbit spreadsheet, you'll see that the total budget recommendation is $3,923,003 for this agency, 22 positions and 21.5 FTE. Now, one item that I need to discuss with you in addition to the 0507 budget relates to this increased fee from the Oregon State Police. And again, that was effective March 1st of this year. And so the agency is finding itself in a position where it's running out of expenditure limitation this biennium. And it's been determined that their need for additional expenditure limitation for the 0305 biennium is $35,000. So one of the things that I would recommend is that you approve this additional limitation for the agency, and also with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the amount until they actually incur the cost. So the motion, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, would be to amend Senate Bill 5574 by deleting the contents of the original bill, because this is a blank appropriations bill, and then adding language to establish other funds expenditure limitation of $3,923,003 for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission for the 0507 biennium, and also adding language to provide the supplemental expenditure limitation of $35,000 for the 0305 biennium. Just a brief mention, the next item in your memo on page 2, by the way, is performance measures, but if we could just skip over that for a moment and talk about the fee increase. As you might recall from their public hearings, they did mention that they have proposed a fee increase in Senate Bill 49. This would allow them to increase their statutorily established caps on several of their fees. And you don't have this bill in your possession right now. It's scheduled to be in front of the Joint Ways and Means Committee tomorrow afternoon for referral back to the Senate, and then the presumption is then that it would get referred to the Senate Special Committee on Budget. But I do want to draw your attention, if I could, to the cash flow analysis that I handed out. I do want to point out there are six scenarios here. And the first one, I don't have that in front of you. The first one assumes that there would be no fee increase, not even up to their current statutory limits, and that they wouldn't change their licenses all to 5 years, and that they would experience the OSP fee increase without any ability to recover those costs. In other words, charge the applicants to fully cover their costs. And you can see in that first set of numbers for the 0507 biennium at the top of the page that they would be in a negative position by the end of the 0507 biennium, and in an even worse position by the end of the 0709 biennium. But then if you look at scenario 2, you'll see that if they increase their fees up to the current statutory limits, because not all of them are up to those limits, if they issue all their licenses for 5 years, if they move to 5-year licenses, and even if they experience the OSP fee increase without the ability to recover those costs, that they are actually okay in terms of their ending balance at the end of the 0507 biennium. They have about 5.1 months worth, and a prudent ending balance is about 3 to 6 months, depending on the type of entity of business, you know, that you're looking at. But then again, at the end of the 0709 biennium, they would be in a negative position in terms of their ending balance. Then if you flip over to the next page for scenario 3, that just shows you that if Senate Bill 49 does pass and they move to 5-year licenses, but they still don't recover all their OSP fee and increased costs, they're okay. At the end of the 0507 biennium, they have about a 7.3 months worth of expenditures in an ending balance. Scenario 4, 5, and 6 simply show you what happens if they can recover the fee increase that they would experience from OSP. And again, if I'll just draw your attention to scenario five. That's if they increase their fees to the current statutory limits, move to all five-year licenses, and they can recover those costs. They're at about 6 months' worth of expenditures at the end of the 05-07 biennium.
Chair Devlin, Councilor, could you give us, disaggregate that, just tell us in a figure how much that OSP increase is actually going to cost. Is it $100,000 or $150,000 or $125,000? Where is that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, the calculation currently for the 05-07 biennium, the effect of that fee increase would be about $136,000. So going from 12 to 28 affects their budget by $136,000 in the 05-07 biennium.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the two that I've shaded are to show you that even if they do not get their fee increase in Senate Bill 49, whether they can recover the increased costs from OSP, they should be okay at the end of 05-07. But for 07-09, if they don't get their fee increase this biennium, this session, they would have to come back next session to seek a fee increase, such as that proposed in Senate Bill 49.
And for the record, the intent here would be that when that bill is referred back to the Senate Budget Committee, that there'll be a discussion about whether or not to proceed with that bill, probably amongst committee members here, the chair of the Senate committee, and also to see if there's any concurrence. Not asking if there's a motion to concur, because there's no bill, but to see if there is a willingness in the House to move the bill also, because it would not make a lot of sense to go through all the trouble to move the bill if there was not a consensus there that the bill should move also. So, but there is not an intent to just let this drop off and not be reconsidered after this.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, then if we could turn our attention back to item 3 on page 2 of the memo. I've distributed to you two pieces of information on the agency's performance measures. One is simply a single sheet of paper, but it has information on the front and the back. And this would be the report that you would adopt for this agency for their performance measures as part of your work today. The with any modifications, by the way, if you want to change anything. The second one, which is more lengthy, is actually the report that we didn't get to during the public hearing, and this gives you information on each one of their performance measures. I guess, Mr. Chair, at this point, I would ask you what your preference is in terms of going through this information.
Okay.
Or
this was actually, although not dwelled upon in the hearing, it was actually part of the original notebook.
Right.
I would guess if you could go over what your recommendations were on
okay.
the performance measures
sure.
might be best. And then if we have specific questions on performance measures that are in here and also in your book, then
okay.
we can go to that.
Mr. Chair, then and members, if you'll turn your attention to the one-page sheet that's got information front and back. It's entitled Legislatively Adopted Performance Measures 2005-07. As you can see, the column for the 2006 target is blank, and you have the opportunity to enter information into that column for each of the performance measures if you so desire, or alternatively, you could simply direct the agency to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim for that committee to review and approve the targets by August 1st, 2006, so that the information can be incorporated into the next annual performance progress report. So I guess, Mr. Chair, at this time, I would ask if you want to spend time on reviewing those targets or if you would rather have the agency report to the
Because I think that the committee would actually have to receive a full report from the agency in order to set targets, I think it's probably best left to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee that can receive that. And for any of you that have not been a member of the Audit Committee before, I have. I think Senator Nelson must have.
No.
You never got that pleasure. The Audits Committee makes this seem exciting.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like a clarification. By what process, what was the process leading to creation of the 2007 targets?
Madam Chair, if I may ask the agency to respond to how they set those targets. One of the things that you'll notice is if you go to the full performance progress report, you'll see that some of the targets in that report differ from what's on this other report. So I think that it would be a good idea to have a discussion about how those targets were set.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain. The targets were derived from, we had one actually stakeholder meeting to talk about this with some folks, and I guess I would have to say that my experience with that was probably like Senator Devlin was hinting at. People just could not get geared up to get excited about helping us assign targets. So one of the things that's really difficult about this process is it an efficiency for my office staff or is it an efficiency for policy by the commission? And that's been a struggle, I think, from the beginning as we've tried to figure out how you measure success for an appointed commission. So we picked targets that were below what we were currently achieving, an improvement, and below in terms of less time or an improvement of service, above what we believe we were currently achieving in what seemed like a reasonable timeline. And I think, for example, I'll just go down to our number two goal of having more than 10 stakeholder committees. I think the first year that I was on staff as executive director, we probably had about 3 to 5 ad hoc stakeholder committees. I've found the more stakeholder committees we have, the much better input we have into policy. The rules are better, they're cleaner, and people generally are happier. So that's how we picked that one. The percentage of phone calls and emails within 3 days is brand new. That's our goal. We've never had it. We never actually had the capability in-house to measure it. And so we think it's reasonable to try to return 90% of them in 3 days. That's, of course, barring employee illness and deluges, and it would be an average. But we now only for the last year have had the actual physical capability to count the true number of phone calls, true number of emails, true number of responses that went out. So, and the cultural competency standards, that was again a best guess. That would be highly ambitious to have 50% of new licensees demonstrate it, because the standards still have to be adopted. We have a draft framework out there, but it hasn't been vetted. It hasn't put up for hearing. It hasn't been adopted. It hasn't been implemented into programs, and we haven't figured out how we would fairly measure that for educators. So
I have two follow-up questions, Mr. Chair. pardon me. I'm not understanding. Well, first of all, I'd like some more information about the composition of the stakeholder groups. And then I'd like to understand why the group was focused on targets for 2007 and not 2006, or why they didn't look at both.
Madam Chair Devlin and Senator Gordley, I believe that when we filled this out, we were asked to target 2 years out, and I don't know why we didn't target 1 year out. I think our chart had 2 years, and I was sitting here looking at this blank column. We had fields that, and I can't know that without going back and looking at my file, but we had dedicated fields that we could fill out, and maybe it was intentionally left open for you to give input for. But I know that we didn't leave a blank column. So it was actually a little surprising to be sitting here a few minutes ago to hear that you might be engaging in that exercise. And this has, I think, been a learning experience for us. So that's the best answer I have.
And the composition of the stakeholder group, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley. Our stakeholders are pretty consistently higher education, Oregon Education Association, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, the School Boards Association, and occasionally we will get some practicing educators from the field, but those we have to personally invite, solicit, pay for their substitutes, and for example, to adopt the new multiple subjects test. We had over 40 educators from the field that substitutes had to be paid for their replacement to come in, and those weren't what I would call the vested stakeholders. Those were the actual classroom teachers. And so, but I would have to tell you that most of our policy groups are the associations and the higher ed folks. Oh, and the Department of Education actually is involved in and invited to all of our committees.
An additional follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Is the stakeholder group still meeting?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, they meet as an ad-needed basis. So, for example, we have an active group that's meeting on alternative assessment.
Let me be more specific. Is the stakeholder group still meeting around the creation of performance measures?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, no.
What technical assistance did the stakeholder group receive around the creation of performance measures? Technical assistance, for example, from the Progress Board?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, we didn't invite the Progress Board to it. We laid out proposed goals, proposed performance standards. We gave them the charts. We gave them what we had 2 years ago. We opened it up and said, what would you want to tell us that you would like to have measured for our achievement? And they were, it's not a sexy issue for them. It was probably the worst meeting I've attended in terms of interest and input. I'll just be candid with you, have no idea to get people engaged in this activity, other than to maybe fail them. That might get them excited.
Well, I really appreciate the candor, frankly, and let me also be candid and say that the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission is experiencing new leadership. New leadership also is inclusive of some new members on your commission. And a part of what you are learning in this as a new team, if you will, at the commission, is that this is a part of your work. It has not been a part of the work of the commission in the past, and so you literally are having to start from scratch, if you will. A part of starting from scratch is to find out, well, who are the experts who could lend their expertise to this effort. The Progress Board, in my view, is one of those places that you need to be looking if you're not already asking them for their assistance. And then the other thing that I find kind of surprising is that given the makeup of the stakeholder group, that it is made up of professional educational organizations, that it seems that you would think that these are groups that have familiarity with performance measurements, and with performance standards. And so perhaps the stakeholder group is not inclusive of those who know that particular arena. Maybe you need to dig a little deeper and find those folks in those professional organizations who do know something about performance measures and performance standards. Those are just my comments off the cuff based on what you're sharing. But I do want to be fair and acknowledge the fact that you all are taking on new work that has not been a part of the commission's portfolio, if you will, in the past, but needs to be.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, I have a new deputy who's been there for 1 year who actually I've been able to charge with going to the progress board meetings and doing this and who's had an interest in it in the past. That's been extremely helpful in terms of time-wise. It's my perception that two performance measures would satisfy our stakeholders. Accurate information from everyone in our office. In other words, that when people call in, they get the same answer from two and three and four different people, which was a horrible problem we had. And I think we've really narrowed down that issue. We have almost no inconsistent answers, and quickly. Answer them quickly and answer them accurately. And after that, people just don't seem to care about measuring our performance. That doesn't mean we won't find ways to do it accountably and find the things we think we ought to be measuring, but I think that getting their interest is fascinatingly difficult.
I will be frank again, and that description is very troubling to me. If it's a description of the, again, the professionals, educators who are sitting around the table with you working on this particular task, something's wrong with that picture. When is your next visit before the Joint Legislative Audit Committee?
The chair was just discussing that. The chair might move it up to March 1st, 2006, instead of August. To be honest, the reason for that is my past experience has been when the sessions here end in July and August, it takes the leadership to about November to appoint interim committees. And they don't usually meet till about January. And so that I think about the earliest you could bring them back before the committee is probably March or yes.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, Larry, thank goodness, is able to look around here. In our budget notebook on page 25, that's why I said I was baffled by the gap. We did 03, 04, 05, 06, yeah. And 07.
Well, I don't think people should actually misinterpret what's before them, because this is sort of like the summary document.
Okay.
And if you look at this column here where it says performance measure number, those specifically relate to the performance measure numbers in this document and then the one in there. And you have established goals in each of those. And I think the question here was, is to have you come in and re-examine those performance, not the performance measures maybe themselves as much as what should be the target for each before the audit committee. Right. That's
Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify, I believe this report came from the Progress Board.
Yes.
And as part of their effort to help us have a report in front of you to adopt for an agency's performance measures. One of the reasons why I made the recommendation that either you or the Joint Legislative Audit Committee review the targets is that, just as an example, if you look in the larger report for performance measure 9, which is on page 10, you'll see that, yes, in fact, the agency does have targets for 06, 07. And this performance measure is percent of investigated cases resolved in 180 days unless pending in another forum. Well, for both 06 and 07, the target is 50%. But then if you look on this report, you'll see that what was put in there was 75%. Likewise, if you go to performance measure 10, the targets for 06 and 07 in the larger report, this is on page 11, the performance measures are 30% of administrative rules will be reviewed for clarity annually, and again, that's for 06 and 07. But if you look on this report that you're to adopt, it says 100%. And in all frankness, because of the push to get these budgets out and doing double the paperwork and sometimes triple the paperwork, I did not have time to go back and find out where these targets came from. And so they do need to be reviewed by somebody, either this committee or for JLAC. I did not want to just take these percentages and plop them in here or make up ones for 06, you know, relative to what's in here for 07. I didn't feel that that was my prerogative. And so that's why I made the recommendation for some legislative committee to make to review those targets. I hope that helps.
Okay. I might be able to provide a way to clarify that when we get to that point.
If I could just make one other comment, Mr. Chair. On this report that you would be adopting, I did want to tell you that the far right-hand column is what the agency is proposing for each one of those performance measures. And the other part of my recommendation for performance measures would be that you agree with what the agency is proposing there, either to delete certain measures, modify one, keep others, and then there is a customer satisfaction performance measures all agencies are going to be required to have, and in fact, that does involve measuring an agency's or the customer satisfaction with an agency's timeliness and accuracy of information, among other things like helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information. The only thing that I would like to point out, though, that I don't agree with is on performance measure 7, and that is percent of completed applications processed in 20 days. And the agency is proposing to delete that. And if you turn to, in the longer report, if you turn to page 9, you'll see that the current system that they have is not capable of tracking the measure. And they are working on revising their data system to decrease processing time, and that's through using technology, and that's a very laudable goal. They've also implemented a fast-track system for Oregon graduates so that they can get their licenses within 10 days. Since one of the primary functions of this agency is in issuing licenses, I believe that at a minimum, the agency should have some sort, even an internal measure, that would allow them to see that they're reaching that goal of issuing licenses within a timely in a timely manner. So if they do delete this in terms of a formal performance measure, I would recommend that you direct them to have some sort of internal measure that they can track, or work towards an internal measure that will allow them to track the timeliness of issuing licenses. And in that case, it would just be deleted, but you know, keep internally. That's the recommendation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, picking up on that particular measure, and again, just trying to understand the information that's in front of us, looking at, and again, I'm looking at page 9 here, the target for 03, 04, and 05, 85%, 90%, 95% respectively. So again, my question is, how do those targets get set? And the data was unknown for each of those 3 years.
I think we might have the agency respond. I think it was a target that was set, and then probably they determined that they had no way of tracking the target that was set.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, Vicki Chamberlain, that's partially correct. The I had to do these in 2003 in about 2 weeks. When I was hired in June, the budget hadn't been done yet, and it had to be turned in, and the performance measures had to be done, and we couldn't convene a stakeholder group. And I knew by rule that the goal in the office was 30 days to turn a license. That was the goal, to turn a license around. And if we achieved it, people were pleased, and that just seemed outrageous. I've learned subsequently it takes 3 to 6 months to get one in California. That doesn't mean that our 20 days isn't a good goal. All of that said, this would include renewals and new licenses, which is over 20,000 licenses. And part of the problems we have run into is that an application could be complete, but then we could be waiting 4 weeks for a test score, or we could be waiting for one thing like that. But one of the reasons these goals are so ambitious is we honest to goodness believed we were months away from getting online visas and online application ability in our office in 2003. We really thought we were on the cusp and at the front of the line with DAS to get that set up. And I'm not pushing blame or anything, because DAS's IT reorganizations and a number of things have prevented us from hopping to the front of that queue, and we have actually stayed on that steadily requesting. Point being is we know that once we can get online applications, our ability to turn things over improves rapidly. So we had very ambitious goals because we believed that was coming, and it just not only has it not materialized, I'm barely hopeful we're going to get it over the next 2 years. So all of it, so I pulled them out of the hat. And then when we went to measure them, as we were required to do in the annual report, we have nothing more than a bare hatch mark system. And the actual physical manpower it would have taken to try to get the actual data just would have not been worth the return just for a report. I had to make a decision. So that's the honest answer.
I have a potential way for us to proceed here, and I will try to put it before you. Under item E, the recommendation for bill amendments, which is the main motion before we get to the final, to approve a motion to amend Senate Bill 5574 by deleting the contents of the original bill, which is a blank bill, adding language to establish other funds expenditure limitation of $3,923,003 for the Teacher Standard Practices Commission for the 2005-2007 biennium, and adding language to provide some supplemental expenditure limitation of $35,000 to the 2003-2005 biennium. But that also includes this following action on performance measures, that the committee directs the agency to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for its review and approval of targets for measures no later than March 1st, 2006. And further, that we accept the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation of adoption of the performance measures, however not including the targets for 2006-2007, as presented in the attached report entitled Legislatively Adopted Performance Measures 2005-7. Also, that the committee directs that while we agree that performance measure 7 be deleted, so we also accept the LFO recommendation that the agency be directed to attempt to keep some form of internal measure to track the time it takes the agency to issue a license, since this is a key function of the agency. The reason I'm putting this forward this way is to be perfectly honest, I think we have the measures before us. We have targets that were submitted by the agencies and then targets that came from other sources, and that somebody needs to look carefully at those targets with the agency, which is actually a perfect task for the for the Joint Interim Audits Committee, and I think that's the best way for us to proceed. We could sit for the next week and debate what these targets should be, but we have a lot of other budgets that we have to work on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm agreeable with that, other than this is one of those agencies that, again, has mandatory reporters, so I want to get some information.
Right.
in the budget report about requiring a performance major on mandatory reporters and how they're meeting that.
Okay. This is an issue that came up in another discussion that I don't know if you were part of.
Oh, yeah, you weren't there. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Can we get in the budget report for this some language indicating to the agency to present also to the audits committee a performance measure on training, and maybe you might give the best language for this.
They're mandatory reporters under four areas of the statute. In their area it would be child abuse, sex abuse, elder abuse, if they come in contact with elders. I'll give that information to you, but Ms. Manthe was the staff person, I think, last week when we discussed this. And so I want to see performance measures developed for every licensing board and commission that has a mandatory reporter, that has purview and overview over a mandatory reporter.
So that
they're adequately trained.
This is actually, it's an ongoing issue because we have so many licensing boards before this committee. Certain professions are identified as mandatory reporters. I think what Senator Walker is trying to do is to find some mechanism so that those licensing entities track the type of if they are getting the training to be mandatory reporters is what it basically comes down to.
And if they're not getting the training, why not? And how this agency is directing that be done.
Yes.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, I understand completely. I think a budget note would be fine. I know the Bar Association requires 1 hour every time you report of your continuing professional development to be on child abuse training. We require continuing professional development of educators. It would be much more powerful to have a statutory directive to include child abuse reporting as part of continuing professional directive development in terms of our ability to implement it quickly and efficiently. A budget note we would still treat seriously, but my point is if you put it in statute, we can go out, make the rules, make it required, and make it immediate, and get it implemented into programs. So it's just a suggestion.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. Chamberlain, we have that in Senate Bill 749, if it ever gets out of the Ways and Means Committee to which it's been sent.
Okay.
That requires all teachers have to participate in mandatory training.
And to clarify this for the record, that's the statutory provision. What we are suggesting here is not a budget note. A budget note is somewhat different from this. This is merely going to be part of the report directing you to report back on this issue to the Joint Legislative Audits Committee. I have to get approval from too many parties for budget notes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't know that I am comfortable adopting the performance measures as they have been presented. What I would be more comfortable with is directing that the agency report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for its review and approval of performance measures, targets, some language to that effect. But I don't know that I can approve what's being presented. If we're being asked to adopt the performance measures as presented, they're so incomplete.
Yeah. Well, I think actually that we were given two choices here. One was to adopt, the other was to direct them to come before the Legislative Audits Committee.
That would be my preference.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to do, is to direct them to come before the Legislative Audits Committee for approval of. Now, my motion was, which was not a motion, it's just an explanation of what a motion might be,
right,
which was on targets. If you wanted to expand that performance measures, I would accept that as a friendly amendment to the motion that has not been made.
I'm seeking help for a motion that would just be directed to the agency reporting its progress, its work to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, period.
Okay.
But not adopting any performance measures that have been presented to us.
Okay. They already do have adopted, from the previous session, adopted performance measures. So in a sense, those stay in effect until
right.
we change them.
That part I understand.
So.
Well, then, Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, why don't we just leave the performance measures in place from 03 biennium that were implemented without adopting any specific recommendation as to these and leaving that to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. That gets us off the hook of approving something we don't really like or know much about.
Senator,
something in place.
Before I try to move anything to any action, I want to find out where Senator Whitsitt is on this.
Chair Devlin, I have a problem with the policy package 101.
Okay.
And I think that's included in this package.
Yeah.
I would not support it.
Why don't I try again, but I won't read it all. If we had a motion for the recommendation of bill amendments, which is section E here, paragraph on page 2 of the LFO recommendation, and then merely a recommendation, or not a recommendation, but a requirement that they report back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for its review and approval of their performance measures no later than March 1st, 2006. The Audits Committee has the authority to approve changes in performance measures, and they may not change anything. They may agree on targets, but they will actually review and could make changes at that time. Would that do what you...
Are we talking about targets for 06, 07?
Well, what we would be doing is reviewing the performance measures, and that could include setting new targets for 2006, 2007.
Yes.
I mean, the Audits Committee is basically largely made up of Ways and Means Committee members.
I understand.
And that's what they basically do during one of their tasks during the interim. And that would also include the language the LFO has on the recommendation for performance measure 7. You're okay with that?
No, I'm not.
Or you're not? Okay. Well, I'll leave it at the first portion.
Well, let me just clarify what you're asking.
Yeah.
Are we agreeing that performance measure 7 be deleted?
Well, actually, I think I may have gotten a little bit farther than I need to get.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So I think just asking them to report back to JLAC for their potential review of potential modification of performance measures and targets is sufficient.
Yes.
along with the recommendation in E on page 2, which is actually the recommendation. And I know Senator Whitsitt does not favor that recommendation. But that's...
So if I'm understanding, we're not approving any new performance measures or deleting any new performance. We're continuing the performance measures as they presently exist and allowing JLAC to review and approve the ones for the biennium.
And including paragraph E, which is the recommendation on bill amendments.
Right.
That's your motion, is it not, Senator Gordley?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor to approve the amendments that are identified, bill amendments identified in paragraph E, along with the recommendation relative to the actions to be taken by JLAC and by the agency. I'm going to open it up for discussion. I believe Senator Whitsitt may want to get his comment on the record again as not being in favor of the package 101. Is that correct?
No, I don't favor the, Mr. Chair, the 101 package. I don't think that we need to enlarge this agency. I think we need to hold them accountable. I think that
some of the numbers here are pretty hard to understand in relation to the percentage given to us, and I just do not favor that package.
Okay. Any additional comments? Can we call the roll?
Yes.
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Whitsett?
No.
Aye. Motion passes. And then we need a final motion, which is identified on page 2, item number 5. If someone wishes to make that.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5574 as amended to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Everyone has heard the motion. Would the committee staff please call the roll again?
Chair Devlin.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'd like to comment on that.
Yes. Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, regrettably, I have developed some major concerns regarding the functions and performance of the Teachers and Standards and Practices Commission. The K-12 education is failing about half of our students and is failing to challenge the other half. The commissioner stated in direct testimony that TSPC does a good job in preparing licensed personnel and that their failure to perform, his failure to actually create educated students, is not the fault of TSPC. Somehow the fault is assigned to the school districts and how they utilize those licensed staff. This failure is evaluated by professional educators who apparently don't have any interest in it. Mr. Chair, I do not buy that excuse or any other excuse for failure. Standing in a circle, so to speak, pointing at the other guy is neither an appropriate response nor a solution. In my opinion, TSPC may be more obstructionist, more protective of licensees, than it is oriented to solving our state's education requirements. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I will point out two salient examples. Senate President Courtney has introduced legislation to require minimal physical education at each grade level, K through 12. School administrators have countered that inadequate funds are available to provide PE instruction. This means that some 500,000 school children will be denied PE. Look to the handout that I passed out, if you would, entitled Knowledge, Skills, and Abilities for Physical Education Endorsements. Direct your attention to just to Section 2, Part D and E. It says describe and apply anatomical, physiological, and biomechanical, bioscience, and psychological concepts to skillful movement, physical activity, and fitness. Understand and debate current physical education and activity issues and laws based on historical, philosophical, and sociological concepts. Mr. Chair, those are two parts of six parts of 13 sections related to PE instructors. Colleagues, I have a very good friend who's a physical therapist, employing and supervising several other PTs. Luke is a former Olympian weightlifter. He has two daughters attending college on full-ride athletic scholarships following being named Oregon Outstanding Female Athlete of the Year in their respective sports of volleyball and track and field. By the standards in your hand, Luke is unqualified to teach kindergarten kids to play dodgeball. On our back-to-school day, I was privileged to visit a Willamette Valley High School and visited with the principal of that school for more than 2.5 hours. This individual is considered one of the best by his peers and by the superintendents. Our 20-minute meeting lasted most of the afternoon because he is so well-informed and so willing to share his knowledge. And yet this man knows virtually every one of his 1,200 students by his first name. It's amazing. This man will lose his administrative position unless he completes an additional education requirement before the start of fall term. Another piece of paper that will qualify him to do his job. Mr. Chair, demonstrated ability and merit are being ignored. I think they're being sacrificed at the altar of TSPA obstructionistic regulations. I just don't see this. I will vote against this budget and any budget
until this obstruction is in this failure to recognize merit and this failure to accept responsibility is corrected. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Not to start a debate here today, but I just did want to put on the record that I do respect Senator Whitsitt's opinion, although I do disagree in some respects, and one of those clearly is that what is before us here today, which I know is not a satisfactory statement for many people, is the budget for the agency and not the policies under which it is guided. I think it's with your strong feelings about the TSPC, Senator Whitsitt, you might want to introduce legislation that has more of a directive on the underlying policies. Because, I mean, I can understand your frustration with this document in the sense of I was just looking at it because, as you probably are aware, I'm debating almost on a daily basis with Senator Courtney his PE requirements. But I had some physical education teachers. It's been many years, and they were good physical education teachers, but maybe the requirements do look pretty onerous in terms of qualifying. So, but I just want to put on the record, it's one of the things we often get into here. What's the line between budget and policy and or a budget committee? So, I mean, and I can see actually not agreeing with a budget because you don't agree with the policies that they're implementing. That's clearly, but I just wanted to state that I'm looking at this from a budget perspective, but I understand that there is a significant policy issue here that you've identified, so...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just believe that the budget drives the policy.
Thank
yes.
you. By the way, that... Yes, Senator Gordley moved to recommendation. Can you please call the rolls?
Aye.
Aye.
Senator
Walker?
Aye.
Aye. And I will carry to the budget committee and to the floor. Committee members, I will also have to figure out how to do this in the future in terms of carrying bills, because in some cases, I think there are some bills where people would have an interest in carrying them. So in some cases, we will have a different carrier to the full committee than to the Senate floor, because to carry to the full committee, you have to be a member of the full committee, but to carry to the floor, you don't have to be. And there may be some bills people have an interest in carrying, and I'll try to respect that. With that, we will close this work session on SB 5574, and we will be actually adjourned until next Monday, or if some leadership in the building decides we should do something differently before next Monday, they will let us know.
Mr. Chair, before you put the gavel down, I just want to say one thing. I think that Senator Whitsitt raises a good point about, I call it the intersection between policy and budget. The separation of policy from budget, budget from policy, is merely a practice.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it written on a tablet anywhere. It is a practice that can be changed. I think that this is an example of the discussion that we're having is an example of how the practice needs to be revisited. Separation is it doesn't make sense for a lot of reasons around a lot of different issues, and I'll just leave it there. But I just wanted to say that to let Senator Whitsitt know that I'm hearing what you're saying about the
And Senator Gordley and Senator Whitsitt and other members, I don't think it's exactly that clear of a line either, because first of all, on a positive note, when the Budget Committee, the Joint Ways and Means Committee, was put together for this session, the President did decide to put some policy committee members on the respective subcommittees. Also, I am aware that we will ultimately receive a number of bills that are policy bills, where that in order to get them into such a form that they might make constitutional muster, meaning having enough votes on the Senate floor to pass, or the House, we might have to engage in policy discussions as a subcommittee of the Budget Committee. That's the only way the bills are going to. Some of them, well, I won't say that, but we will also be in policy discussions there. So it's kind of, it's not really that hard and fast, but I do think that the line gets to be gray, and I can understand how difficult an issue it is. So. With that, though, we are adjourned till Monday, unless leadership notifies us differently.